It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, thank you for joining us for another broadcast of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Now, I love history, old houses, and roses. And our guest tonight is living the dream of all three. As Rosarian for America's largest home, the Biltmore Estate, Lucas Jack is setting a new standard for rose care in the U.S. with his approach to gardening.
You're so right, Chris. This garden is one of America's finest rose gardens, yet it gives you a truly international experience. Of the 1,800 roses, there are roses that were grown at the end of the 19th century, plus many of the modern varieties. There's roses from China, England, France, and the Biltmore is the site of the International Rose Trust. So there's truly something for every rose lover. Chris, have you been to the Biltmore?
I have. We went there probably about 10 or 15 years ago, and it was quite a day. And we could have stayed probably 3 days and still not seen everything.
Oh, that's true. You know, it's a huge place, but when I'm there, it makes me feel all warm and cozy, like the family just, you know, they're just on vacation. I think it just has that feeling that the family's still there. So I love the walking into their lives sort of feeling.
Oh, absolutely. Although I will tell you that they wouldn't let me bowl in the bowling alley.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
What's up with that, Lucas? No.
Yeah.
Lucas probably hasn't done that either.
No.
The Biltmore story begins in the late 1800s with George Washington Vanderbilt. He discovered the beautiful mountains of western North Carolina while he was traveling with his mother. Then he amassed thousands of acres, and he set about building a 250-room home and farm designed to be self-sustaining. Can you imagine 250 rooms? What would Tina think about living in a house that size?
Oh, my. She would be the dowager countess for sure.
I have to say I always equate the size of the house with how much time I'd have to spend cleaning and how much time I would not get to spend gardening. So maybe smaller is better for me. Don't want to clean it. I'm sure it was not something that entered their mind, though. You know, I've had the pleasure of seeing the Biltmore Garden in the summer and in the winter, and it's beautiful in both seasons. There's so many beautiful structures, but you really got to see it when the roses are in bloom. And then you can see Lucas's handiwork. Lucas is with us in the virtual studio, and when we come back, he'll join us to talk about what's going on in the garden these days. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mites, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose Magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the Rose Photography Contest, visit ars.org.
Well, it's time to get started. Hey, Lucas. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Hey, Teresa. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm nice and cozy in the potting shed, but outside the wind is howling, and I think it's going to get down to about 12 degrees. Not quite spring yet here. How about you?
Oh, I know. We actually we were nearly 70 degrees this afternoon, and actually early, almost noon. By the time I got home at 4:30, we were down to 56, and we just rolled in the driveway from church. It's 34 and snowing, so we have obviously it's a reminder that it is March. It's a cruel trick because we do have daffodils blooming around here now. But hopefully we'll be all done with this soon and we can just kind of focus on spring and what that means to all of us. So, but it's wonderful to be on. Thank you so much for having me on this evening.
Oh, we're glad to have you. All the rose growers I know are talking about the winter and the effect that the polar vortex has had. So are you seeing the effects there from the harsh winter?
Absolutely. And not just, you know, our garden is, just for the folks out there, if you've not been to the Biltmore Estate, there's not just a rose garden there. We have a large ramble or shrub garden that we do have actually some species roses and some lesser known near species roses and their hybrids in that garden. We have a large azalea garden. We have rhododendrons. We have, because of Olmsted influence, a lot of English ivy in the garden and things of that nature. Inside of the walled garden, which is the 4-acre garden where the rose garden is, we have ornamental trees and shrubs and, of course, the roses themselves. And we've actually had cold damage not just on the roses but on a lot of other plants that have been in the garden for decades. We lost almost all the native river cane and the bamboo on the estate. That's had to be cut back down to the ground completely. The roses, actually,
oh,
I would say, it's incredible. We're talking acres and acres if you take everything into consideration.
Beautiful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. We actually had English ivy get completely burned. I've never seen that ever before. But the rose garden in general has fared pretty decently. We did have some hybrid teas that were killed back. Some stuff we lost upwards of 80 to 85% of the canes on plants, and the remaining canes had to be cut back further than what we would have liked. The surprising thing was roses that aren't generally known for their cold hardiness, like some of the teas and noisettes, actually weathered it just fine. But then again, those are a lot older of a rose as far as them being in the garden themselves. So it's really kind of shake your head and wonder, you know, how exactly this happened. But really it started back. We had several nights that were incredibly cold. One of them, we got down below zero, which is pretty rare for the Asheville area. It does happen, but not every year. When you get that cold and you have a good bit of wind and you have no snow on the ground to protect those plants against that, you know, harshness, I think that's when you really get in trouble, and we obviously did.
Mm. Well, now that things are beginning to thaw, what's first on the spring chore list there?
Oh, goodness. Well, it's interesting to see stuff start to come up regardless of what the weather's like. We've had a lot of daffodils starting to emerge. The thaw, it's nice. I mean, in the last couple of days, we've actually had our first blooms, our first true blooms this week, actually. This is the latest that I can ever remember our daffodils blooming in Asheville. I've been here now 10 years. I've never seen daffodils not bloom until after March 1st. So that's happening, and that just lets us know, you know, spring is definitely around the corner. A lot of our work is a lot of our projects we do during the middle of the winter, so now we're really getting into actually grooming the garden. Even though we don't have leaves on yet, we've already finished our hard prune. We've already sprayed our lime sulfur, so we're kind of getting in the spot where we're getting that rotation of making sure our winter weeds are taken care of, and you know, things are just really starting to become a garden once again now that the thaw has really taken place.
What's your thoughts on some of the bugs and things that we had in the fall? Do you think the cold snap's going to help us there with that?
Well, I'm really interested to see. Actually, just looking at the notes here, you know, one of the things that we often anticipate is with a warm winter for us to not really have a kill on, you know, harmful insects. But, you know, this year I would think that, you know, hopefully we'll see a reduction in numbers. I don't know what's going to do to things like Japanese beetle larvae, because it was so incredibly rainy last year, they would have had no problem burrowing down and laying their eggs pretty well deep. Then again, you know, it could have been too wet for them too. They could have laid them, you know, shallow. We did have a couple beds that I was working in the middle of winter, and at times we had about 6 inches of frost in the ground. So I'm hoping that translates to, you know, our nasty bugs being killed off. But then again, you know, how much of our beneficial insects are probably impacted by the same thing? So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I've cried on everyone's shoulder that will listen about my outbreak of rose midge last year. And I had read that they lay their eggs in like the top 2 inches of soil. So I was really hopeful that rose midge was being frozen out. It was my only solace to all the cold. But
you find those silver linings. I mean, definitely, you know, as a gardener, you know, I have family up north, and the family that I have that are gardeners, they kind of, you know, they cringe at how long everything is lasting, but they've got so much snow up in Michigan on the ground that really things are kind of protected underneath that. It's like what we had, you know, there's no silver lining in the fact when you don't have any protection and it's, you know, negative 10 out or whatever it might be. But, you know, sometimes some things about winter, there can be a really good benefit to it. It's amazing what a freeze and thaw can really do for, like, breaking up hard soil. And we've definitely seen a lot of that as well.
Mm, that's a good benefit. Well, on the positive side of things, what new things are you adding this year?
Oh, my goodness. I guess I went on a shopping spree. but nonetheless, actually, it was really influenced. In September, we actually had a visit from Michael Marriott of David Austin Roses to the garden. I actually we walked through the garden together, and it was really interesting because a lot of times when people come into the garden, you know, they kind of walk through and they just kind of meander, and maybe they don't look at every bed. Michael took his time and he looked at every bed of roses and gave me his opinion on it. But he also had made mention of a lot of things that he felt like could be of great benefit to our garden, a lot of plants. So we absolutely have added a lot of plants to the garden. So would you like for me to just kind of go through a few of them?
Yes.
Great.
Yes, tell us about them.
Just quickly before I go through them, one of the things that we do is we have our large interior beds, which we plant out in kind of a more of a formal style, and we densely pack the roses in there. And then we have a perennial border, which some of these are being added in the perennial border. We have climbers, and so some of these would be climbers, and then also tree standards. So really, it all four situations, this is what we have. So I'm adding a couple familiar names to the garden this year. Mr. Lincoln Hybrid Tea, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. It's grown really well in our garden. We only had a few of them, but it did so well. And so we really had a need for a nice red hybrid tea in the garden, so we decided to add a bed of those. A rose that I'm really excited about seeing grow and hopefully establish quite well is also a hybrid tea called Liv Tyler. The name that it's under, it's actually Milan International released it, and it's known in Europe as Comtesse de Provence. So you can look up either of those names. Another hybrid tea that we're introducing on kind of the suggestion of several rosarians around the area is the McCartney Rose. So I'm really interested to see how that will do. Now, the next couple are actually roses that did quite well in our trials from 2011. And so that was one of the benefits of the trials was to give us something to see how this will do in a completely sustainable trial. So Mother of Pearl, a nice grandiflora, also a Milan Rose. Litchfield Angel, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. We're adding more Litchfield Angel. That's a David Austin Rose. We are adding a large bed of Lady Emma Hamilton, a very large bed of Charles Darwin, again, nice English roses. we're trying one that's a little bit experimental for our area, but I've heard some good things about it, and that's the Twilight Zone. I think that's either a Grandiflora or a Floribunda one from Weeks. Really interested to have just that really deep shades of, you know, possibly even purple, but definitely deep crimson for sure. A couple others, Harlow Carr, which is, again, another Austin Rose. And then another one that was in our trials and did really, really well for us, and I think we'll be very happy with it. It's a Floribunda Orchid Romance. That's a Bill Radler release. So it's a great one. Just to kind of quickly just run through our climbers, Eden, which is a lot of people are familiar with Eden. The rest of these are all David Austin Roses, a Shropshire Lad, Malvern Hills, Snow Goose, Crown Princess Margareta, Constance Spry, Graham Thomas, and Mortimer Sackler. We're particularly interested in repeat blooming roses, and those that are the Ramblers, I think definitely Snow Goose qualifies as a very nice English Rambler. They do quite well in our garden. And then to make things easy as far as for the purposes of the show, if any of your listeners will just go to David Austin's website and look up which roses are available in tree standards, we're putting two of every one of those in the garden. So that tallies up to 28 or 30, I think. We have those in the garden, and then we also are putting in it's also a Floribunda Love Song as a tree standard as well. All in all, we're adding 31 tree standards to our existing A. So we'll have about 39 or 40 tree standards by spring. And they're actually all in our cold frame right now growing very happily. So the last little bit is actually a group that I'm really excited about that we've had kind of a lack of in the garden, but I think it's for our garden, you know, Chris had mentioned earlier about, you know, Biltmore being a historical place, and it's very, very important that we keep that facet of the rose garden, and it's not all just new roses. But these are roses that were definitely selected and influenced by Michael Marriott's opinions on things and just his encouragement. And these are old roses. Queen of Denmark is an Alba we're adding. These are all going to the perennial border. Queen of Denmark, Rosa Gallica officinalis, which if you actually look at the ARS selector, Rosa Gallica officinalis has one of the highest ratings of any rose in that selector. Rosa Mundi, Cameo, those are all Gallicas. Felicity Parmentier, a Damask rose. Isfahan, another Damask rose. Tuscany Superb, that's another Gallica. I hope I got these classes right. One class that I'm really happy to add to the garden is the Moss Rose class, and William Lobb is the one that we selected for that. Jacques Cartier, a Portland rose. We do have a rose de Retch already in the garden as a Portland. Comte de Chambord, another Portland. Madame Hardy, another Damask. La Ville de Bruxelles, like, not French, so I'm probably not really pronouncing these correct. But and then, yeah, you know.
You're on a roll, brother.
Yeah, exactly. I have German and Scottish ancestry. I can't do French very well. everything comes out harsh. So, and then Alba Maxima is another one we're adding, and we're really excited because as we display these roses in the gardens, we put the dates of their release, of their hybridization, and it's really cool to actually put things like, you know, with Rosa Gallica officinalis, we know that that was actually used for the House of Lancaster during the War of Roses in England. So we actually know that we can put that it was hybridized before 1240, and that's incredible.
And London saw her glory.
You know, yeah, and, you know, Alba Maxima, indeed, as well. There's a lot of thought that possibly that rose could have been also Alba Semiplana, or the rose of the House of York. The other names for, like, Rosa Gallica are the Apothecary's Rose.
Sure.
So just things like that, you know, they're very historical and in keeping with not just the garden itself, but kind of the way George Vanderbilt was a collector. He was a collector of things. It wasn't just in the house these artifacts or these artwork or things from the Far East. It was also in his plants, and it was reflected in the fact that he hired Olmsted to design his garden. He would reflect that personality. So I think we, you know, our goal is to really strive not just to be progressive as George Vanderbilt was as far as technology, so we're progressive in our gardening, but also to really display and showcase a collection of historical artifacts. And for me, that obviously means, you know, roses that are very historical and important to what we do today. So there's your rundown.
I am drooling, especially as you mentioned the old garden roses. Several of them I have in my garden. I can't wait to see what they look like in the Biltmore garden.
I'm very much looking forward to it, too. I've got to obviously put my patient pants on with all this because, you know, I mean, you know, as gardeners, we love to see things. And, you know, with a lot of these old roses, I may not get a whole lot of bloom this year, you know, but, you know, taking care of them and, you know, getting them well established within 2 or 3 years, I'm really looking forward to seeing the show. You know, just all in all, this year, not including the trials, we're adding about 300 new roses to the garden.
Oh, and the fragrance of all, so many of those that you mentioned, they're the most fragrant roses that exist, and it's just going to be spectacular. You mentioned
that's important to us.
Oh, it is. Just the romance of it all is a beautiful place for all of that romance. You mentioned all the roses that you have in cold frames. So would you mind walking through some of your top tips for planting roses?
Yeah. I probably put a lot of emphasis not in, how can I phrase this? To me, it's more important what I'm doing with the soil than it is what I'm doing with the plant, if that makes sense. You know, a lot of gardeners will baby and baby and baby. And, you know, if you come back into the cold frame when I get a shipment of roses in the cold frame, I have it set up where I have I customly mix my potting soil. Of course, I have a large bin that I actually soak the roses in a root drench, and so they might sit in there all day while I'm, you know, a minimum of all day. Sometimes if I've not finished it up and it's not going to freeze overnight, I'll leave them in there overnight. I really don't mind. I don't put a whole lot of emphasis into how long it sits in there. I just want them in for more than an hour. You know, I kind of almost treat it like a production line. So when I got, you know, my David Austin roses in here, all of a sudden I've got 300 roses. I really don't have time to be gentle with them. So I'm going through, I'm root pruning them, potting them up, you know, making sure that they're, you know, watered properly, and they're enjoying the cold frame. But when that's not being done in the garden, to me it's all about, I want to achieve, I guess, I look for soil, like how the soil feels in my hand and, you know, the moisture of it and what I'm putting into it as far as amendments. I don't want it so heavy so that it just holds and gets boggy during the summer. And a lot of times you can tell that by the texture of the soil and the organics that are in it. The organics are incredibly fine. A lot of times you may get a compression of the soil. It can get boggy. But, you know, if you kind of keep things, you know, loose and keep some larger stuff in there, pine soil conditioner is something we use quite a bit of, it really helps. So I really do a lot of soil work during the wintertime. You know, once those roses are planted in the garden, which I plant the bare roots actually directly during the wintertime, and then I will mulch the bed. I'll put the irrigation down. I'll mulch the bed, and I'll actually mound a little mulch over the top of the bud union and over the top, you know, bottom 3 or 4 inches of the stems just to kind of protect them. And I did that last year and with almost 100% success. And we had as cold of a spring last year as we're having now, so I really didn't feel like that was going to be any issue. But definitely just putting a lot of emphasis into soil. You know, I used to tell clients when I had my own landscape business, I still do some landscaping, but I used to tell them, if you would put $2 into soil amending for every dollar that you put into plants, you won't lose as many plants to drought, to cold, to excessively wet conditions, to disease. A lot of people skimp on the soil. The soil is your most important part, and I'm sure, you know, any professional is going to preach the exact same thing. You can put as much nutrients down as you want to. You can throw as much water as you want to, but if the soil won't hold it, then the soil is not going to keep your plant. And so to me, that's kind of where I feel like my emphasis needs to come from, is really working to produce a healthy home for the plant and not just give it junk food.
Chris and I totally agree. So newbies, if you're planting, that's exactly how you do it. That's exactly what you need to do. We've been mentioning the rose trials back and forth as we talk.
Yeah.
Could you newbies up to speed on what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Starting in 2011, we started with the help of Paul Zimmerman, who is the coordinator of the Rose Trials. He came to Biltmore and said, you know, you guys really ought to consider doing an international Rose Trial. And our director, Parker Andes, it definitely had a lot of foresight to see this is going to be a really good direction for us. So he agreed to it, and Paul started coordinating it that very first year. I didn't come in until halfway through 2011, so I kind of came into it and kind of had to learn the ropes almost immediately. But we are one of only two international rose trials in the United States. And what an international rose trial does is kind of similar to other rose trials, but we kind of fall in line and under the jurisdiction definitely of the World Federation of Rose Societies and how they like to have the guidelines of their rose trials across the world being run. So the rose trial takes, for instance, the 2011 roses were planted in 2011. We would plant blocks of six of roses that were given a number instead of us putting the name in the class. And the reason for that is because these roses were to be judged nine times over the course of 2 years, basically from May of 2011 to May of 2013. They were judged nine times. So as to keep the judging as impartial as possible, because, you know, look, we all have our favorite roses and our favorite breeders. So just to kind of make sure that we're not giving a few more points to Austin or giving a few more points to Cordis, we gave everything basically a system of numbers and just by class. So they're judged nine times by class, so against the class standard, so shrubs against other shrubs, hybrides against hybrides, and so forth and so on. They are treated completely sustainable. In other words, we don't use any conventional chemicals or fertilizers on those plants. We use all natural, and I say all natural, and I stress that, not necessarily organic, okay, but all natural sustainable products. They're given a fertilizer twice a year. They're hard pruned once a year, and they are only deadheaded about two or three times in a season. They are not giving any fungicides to prevent black spot. Now, for a lot of folks out there listening, if you live in the Southeast, you know powdery mildew is not your culprit most of the time. It's black spot. This is might be one of the hardest places in the world outside of China to grow roses because of black spot. I mean, it's just terrible. So we don't really treat for powdery mildew. It's not what we're looking for. If we get it, then it's marked, obviously, that, hey, this plant exhibits powdery mildew. And by the way, if it exhibits powdery mildew in our garden, it's going to be terrible in California. I can tell you that. So we don't spray it for any fungus at all. This comes in, what we're really wanting to see is five things. We're wanting to see how disease-resistant they are, especially the black spot again. We want to see their overall health and vigor to be able to establish themselves and then grow vigorously under minimal human intrusion, if you want to put it that way. In other words, we don't want to put so much into them that we're giving a false sense of how this rose performs. So health and vigor is definitely part of that. The bloom, the amount of bloom and the quality of the bloom, you know, again, is it a nice, appealing bloom for a shrub or a hybrid tea? The ability to recurrent bloom. So a lot of times you'll see roses in the trials that have blooms on them, they have buds set, and they may even have spent blooms on them. And we actually stop deadheading. We do not deadhead any later than 2 weeks before the window of judging may occur. So that way that they can see if there are deadheads on them in the fall, they'll definitely see if they do set hips. So this is one way that they can tell a recurrent bloom. And then lastly, and not necessarily the most important, but important for our garden, is fragrance. So those are the five things that they are judged on. It all adds up to about 100%. Some things are weighted a little heavier because, after all, it's a sustainable trial. We're looking for the most healthy and vigorous roses. So that doesn't necessarily mean we're looking for fragrance. However, that's important to us. So that's generally the international rose trials in a nutshell. Last thing I should maybe mention is that we invite the breeders to submit three, up sometimes maybe four of their new roses, or maybe roses that they've had trialed in other places, maybe in Europe or on the West Coast, but want to see how they do in the Southeast. So, that's part of it as well. So we just had completed our first two-year cycle this last May. The roses we planted in 2012, that was the first group that I actually planted and really worked with hands-on, from bare roots to, you know, mature plants. Those will be judged by the international jury in this upcoming May. And I should also mention we have two groups of judges. We have a permanent jury who are rose professionals from around the Carolinas and Tennessee and Georgia. They're enthusiasts. We have a writer from Southern Living. Jay Hires from Edisto Gardens is one of our judges. David Pike from Witherspoon Rose Culture. I should also mention, there's just some awesome people out there. We have a guy coming up from Atlanta Botanical Gardens to judge. And then, so they judge January, May, July, and September. And then the international jury just comes once a year on May. And so those, over the course of the 2 years, all the data is compiled, and then winners are selected based upon their overall the overall data that we have, the entire data set, so that you're not just seeing a rose on its bad day. You might see it on a really good day, so it equals out over time. So that's a lot just to kind of give you the gist of it, but that's what our International Rose Trial is, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great pleasure to grow some awesome roses and to see some stuff. I mean, there's things that are not released yet to the public that we have in our garden. So I'm going to have to ask, if anybody comes, don't bring your pruners into my garden. You'll get me in trouble. I don't want to see any cuttings going home in anybody's pockets. If you do, we have security.
What are you trying to say, Lucas?
Yeah, I know you guys.
I have to check Tina's bag because Chris might drop something in there.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I just brushed by this rose and a limb fell off. I guess I'll have to pocket it, and you got that little moist towelette in there and you've got the thing rolled up in there. I'm like, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I just happen to have a Ziploc and a wet paper towel.
How coincidental. But, all seriousness, this is the way we are. If this is your first time listening to Rose Chat Radio, you're getting an indoctrination into how rose people are. We just love, I know people are like, can I take a cutting? I'm like, no.
Chris tells a story. Chris, go ahead and tell your story about the gal from your Rose Society that would take pruning shears or something close to the funeral.
Well, she did. She always had them, and she was at a funeral at a graveside service, and there was a rose nearby, and she got a cutting.
Oh, yeah. I know people. I've had actually emails from a lady who she would wanting to know what I would suggest for rooting roses from the florist shop. And I thought to myself, really? I mean, you don't even know what kind of rose that is, It may not even be, but she's so enthusiastic about it, I guess that's how it works. So.
Oh, and there is such a thing as patent. We do have to be careful.
Yes. Yes.
Careful. And tell us a little bit about one of the big winners was someone that none of us had ever heard of before last year.
Yeah, I'll just kind of real quick just go back over the winners. There are, I'm looking at my list here, there were six winners from last year, multiple categories, but I'll go with the ones that have the names first. They're all familiar to people. And then I will go over the one that you're talking about in particular. But Milwaukee's Calatrava won the best Floribunda. Roxy, which is a Cordis rose, won the best ground cover. Beverly, which is also a Cordis hybrid tea, which is very limitedly available, is an incredible hybrid tea. I just have to say, it's incredibly fragrant. Did you get some, Teresa? Did you get some of Beverly?
Yes, Chris and I both have several, and they did well in both our gardens. I absolutely love it.
I've had no problem. I've actually got some in pots in the wintertime, and they, came through like a champ. So I'm really excited about that. So it won Best Hybrid Tea and Best Fragrance, and obviously if you've ever, Beverly has a very intoxicating fragrance, I'd say. Darcy Bustle won our Best Shrub category, and Sunshine Daydream won the open class for, in this case it's Grandiflora. But the one in particular that you're talking about, Teresa, I still am not sure, and I should probably contact the breeder. I still don't know that it actually has, that it's being marketed in the United States, or if it has naming rights that have been purchased to it. But it's by a breeder named Mike Athey. Mike Athey is from New Zealand. Actually, I've had some email conversations with Mike Athey. I think you guys may even talk to him on the show.
Delightful.
Yeah, so he had this rose. We actually trialed it as a climber, although in New Zealand they grow it as a ground cover, so it's really interesting to see how this thing grew. But one of his roses, as a climber, won the best climber class. It won overall for the entire trial. It won the international jury's favorite. I think it was like four or five categories. I don't have them all in front of me right now, but I knew it won four or five categories. It's just, most disease resistant. This is really an impressive win to me because international jury had never seen it and selected it as their favorite, and it wasn't blooming. It just got buds at that. And so, you know, when you're looking at all these buds, I mean, over six, and the thing is, and in the climbers, we only plant them in blocks of three. We grow them on small trellises, so we give them more space, you know. So there's like one in the front and two in the back, and they're kind of, in a triangle shape. So, you know, here you're looking at three plants that literally are covered with what looks like tens of thousands of buds. And it was selected. It absolutely was. There was never any disease whatsoever on these plants. I'm not making this up. There is no disease. And I think that was one of the big appeals to it, not to mention its health and vigor was incredible. You could, if you wanted to, make your Rose Society friends cringe, you could actually take a hedge trimmer to it to prune it. I mean, it's just that vigorous of a plant. Somewhere right now, somebody's shaking and taking, Tylenol. They're like, that. I just can't handle that. That just goes to show, I mean, you know, I don't do that, but you could. And I actually, through the conversation I had with Mike, you know, it's just really interesting. I think even on the show that he did with you, is talking about basically his selection process and his breeding process. And it's really, really, it's really cool to have a breeder out there, and there's several of them, but it's really cool to see that direction of things, I think. And also, I want to make honorable mention of the fact that not only did his climber do quite well, but he had another climber that actually placed second overall to everything in the garden, but because it was another climber, did not get an award at all. And then also one of his shrubs placed fourth overall, but because Darcy placed just ahead of it, it also did not receive. But his roses basically ranked 1, 2, and 4 in our trial overall. And we are incredibly happy for Mike for that to happen. So if you get a chance, definitely check out Mike Athey Roses.
We had him on the show a couple of times, and one of the things that I'll never forget is we were talking about pruning roses, and I do believe, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe he said something about using a bush hog.
He did. And
he's not delicate with his roses.
It's scary. Like I said, some people were probably just leaning back in their chairs wondering, did this guy just really say what I think he just said? And we're all going, yeah, he just did.
Yeah, we had some of our more genteel rose gardeners fell over in their chairs.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I had the privilege of seeing both those roses in bloom, the pink that you mentioned and the winter, and they were beautiful. And still, when I was there, completely disease, free. There was just no disease at all. Impressive.
Very impressive.
Those of us that are backyard gardeners, we are so excited about these rose trials because it's going to make all of us better able to make better decisions about the roses that we have in our gardens. So,
absolutely.
Thanks for all the work that you do. And that brings me to something else that I wanted to talk about before we let you go. The Great Rosarians of the World Rose Garden Hall of Fame Awards was given out to the Biltmore Rose Garden. Hey, that is so impressive. Tell us about that.
Thank you. I just, I love gardening, and it's kind of part of our family. It's what we do. And, you know, I didn't really take the job for an accolade, honestly, you know, and I think that's true of a lot of people. You know, we don't do what we do because we want attention. We do what we do because we love it. And I was really shocked by it. It was really interesting. Obviously, it's a very distinguishing honor and completely unexpected. You know, we really weren't going for an award, and a few years ago, you couldn't even tell me that award was out there because I'm very new to roses. I'm passionate about it, and I love gardening, but this is, you know, still very new. So when I first heard about it, it was actually at the trials last year. Pat Shanley, who is the vice president of the ARS, she basically came to me and said, you know, I want to nominate you guys for this award. And there you go. You know, I was like, okay, you know, that's awesome. And I got a little anecdote. The first summer I was in the garden, it was early in the morning, and an older gentleman came into the garden, and he's just kind of looking at the rose garden. He goes, you know, this nice rose garden, but have you ever been to Bouchard? And I kind of was like, no, I haven't. And I had heard so many comments that year like that. And, you know, that was my first year, and there was, for several years, it was kind of a flux there. And it kind of not lit a fire in me, but I kind of almost became like, I don't really like being compared. You know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like, I just don't like it. But what it did tell me was there's something to be achieved that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And for me it was, you know, we had a good system in place. We were using our interns to go through and quantify through data the quality and health of our roses. And I used that over the 2 years, worked with Paul to find good disease-resistant roses, but also roses that were fragrant and that fit our overall historical, you know, garden theme, whatever it was. And, you know, it's been a lot of hard work, and we've had a lot of people. You know, I have to mention, you know, that do have help from the National Blue Ridge Rose Society, which is our local society. We actually have some paid staff from them, you know, and other members of the wall garden who aren't necessarily part of the rose garden. But we worked hard the last several years, and I didn't realize that this is what it was going to lead to. So to go from, you know, this is a nice garden, but have you ever been to Bouchard? This is a nice garden, but have you ever been over here? To all of a sudden being put in that same position was just a shock. And so, again, it's just that our approach is kind of a duality of priority. Is, one, have an excellent show garden for the guests and for our owners. I mean, the fact is Biltmore is still a privately owned piece of property. And we don't know that, you know, that the family doesn't walk through the garden in the evening when all the guests are gone. You know, they may not divulge that. And secondly is to have us as a sustainable as possible garden, you know, given that our first priority is met. So that's kind of been our area of concentration, and we were really just plugging along with those two things in mind when all this came about. So, you know, you know, a couple of us are going to be going up to New York in June. I'm really excited about it, and just keep me more excited. And it's really kind of a big time because, you know, we have our International Rose Trial Day, Memorial Day weekend, and then we turn around and go to New York 2 weeks later. So it's going to be like rose overload, and definitely need a vacation and, you know, go someplace where there is no gardens, maybe for a week, just to kind of, you know, just take in what has just happened. So it's really an honor, but I do have to just say, you know, God has really blessed us, and I'm just very thankful that he has allowed me and put me into a position where I can just use my gifts and talents for him. And so for me, that's really what it's about. You know, my mom used to preach to me when I was a kid, whatever you do, do it as unto the Lord. And that was kind of my philosophy when I walked in the garden, and the garden was defoliated my first week. And I realized I'm going to have to do this as unto the Lord.
Right.
You know, and that's a you know, whatever philosophy that you want to do, that you want to put out there, that drives you towards excellence, okay. You know, and so for me, that was what really kind of just resonated in me, was do this as if I'm presenting it to somebody as my very best. And so I just want to continue to do that. It doesn't stop with this award. The award's just a confirmation of the work we're doing, but we still got to continue to do it, because the biggest confirmation of what we're doing is when you guys who are rose enthusiasts and other gardeners who maybe don't know nothing about roses, or maybe just the regular everyday guest, comes in and they're just transfixed, you know, and that's what
right.
I really want. I want that experience to really be the award.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you can rest assured that people in, are walking through other rose gardens now, and they're saying to that rosarian, "But have you seen the Biltmore Garden?"
Oh, no, don't tell me that. Don't tell
they
me that.
That is so true. And
yeah.
There is a beautiful capture in this month's American Rose, the ARS magazine. On page 49, there is a beautiful capture of the rose. You can tell exactly why you are a Hall of Fame Awards winner. It's a beautiful capture of the garden and with the chateau in the background. So every rosarian should have a visit to the Biltmore Rose Garden on their list. Lucas, we're very proud of you, and we appreciate
Thank you.
What you're doing for the cause of roses. And even though it's probably not exactly what you want to hear, do take a bow, because you've done a very good thing, and we're very proud of it and very happy for you.
Thank you, Teresa. Do I have time to give a plug for a couple things that are going on?
Yes.
And possibly?
Yes,
okay,
please.
Just real quick. I really appreciate the show again. Thank you so much for having me on. I just wanted to quickly just plug our trials and let y'all know when the trials are happening that they are open to the public. We're going to have our two-day event in the garden starting on the evening of May the 23rd. Friday night there's going to be a wine and rose reception in the Rose Garden starting at 6 and running till 8 o'clock. There will be light hors d'oeuvres. And then first thing Saturday morning starting at 9 starts the judging. So Saturday you'll be able to come in, view the judging. Paul and myself will actually take the paid guest through the judging process, and y'all will actually be involved in the judging. If you decide to come, be part of our event, you're going to help us judge five beds of roses for the best established rose, and we're going to use the same criteria that the international jury is using. So we're going to have that. Immediately following all that, we're going to have a lunch banquet and an award ceremony, and it's just a great time. So from 9 a.m. basically until 3 or 3:30, you'll have complete access to the estate. You'll be able to talk to these judges. You'll be able to talk to rose professionals. You know, members of the ARS and World Federation of Rose Societies will be there. The cost, if you want to be part of that two-day event, is $200. If you're a season ticket holder, it's $153, I think. But that's not the only thing going on in Nashville that weekend. Our local Rose Society chapter is having a two-day exhibition and classes at the North Carolina Arboretum at the same time. Now, the cost for that is $10 admission at the gate per day. So you could actually, if you want to come down to Asheville, we'd love to have you. Come to the trials, and then definitely go over to the North Carolina Arboretum for the Asheville Blue Rose Society exhibition. There'll be a lot of roses on display there from, you know, local enthusiasts. Again, we'll have classes and everything like that. So it's really a great reason to come to Asheville for 4 or 5 days and just hang out, and you know, we can just have a really good time. And so we hope that anybody can make it out.
Well, Chris and I are actually going to be there, and we can't wait to be a part of this. We're excited.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, we just can't wait. Well, thanks for coming on and telling us all about what's going on in the Rose Garden. It's been so
yes,
good
ma'am.
To have you.
Thank you.
Well, Lucas, it's been awesome, man. It's good to talk with you. Don't let the snow get your roses now.
I'm not. I'm looking at my David Austin catalog. I got my 20th Century Baseball Chronicle laid out here. I'm ready for the Kentucky Derby. I'm ready for the Masters. I'm ready for, you know, everything this spring. So it'll be here before we know it. We'll just, as I tell my daughter, just go to sleep, and when you wake up, it'll be happy outside. So y'all have a good night. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, Good to be with you. Well, friends, it's hard to believe that we're at the end of another broadcast, but we'll be back next week with another awesome guest. And until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.